You're traveling with Monitor 65 on NBC, my friend, and I'm your host, Gene Rayburn. Generally speaking, Monitor doesn't concern itself with such questions as how to get rid of old girlfriends, but Nichols and May do in exactly 2 minutes and 28 seconds, which is the time required for Miss Edie Gourmet to sing her latest, Do I Hear a Waltz, from the upcoming Richard Rodgers musical of the same name.
Very odd, but I hear a waltz. There isn't a band, and I don't understand it at all. I can't hear a waltz. Oh, my Lord, there it goes again. Why is nobody dancing in the street? Can't they hear the beat?
There she goes, fading in the background. And now it's Monitor Comedy Time. With Mike Nichols and Elaine May. The writer, O. Henry, is known as the master of the surprise ending. You know, Nichols and May don't do so bad either.
Would you like something to eat, dear?
No.
Something the matter?
No.
What happened today?
Nothing.
Something must have happened.
No, well, it didn't.
You mad at me?
No.
You're a little mad.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Why must you take everything personally?
I'm sorry.
It has only to reflect on you. Isn't it possible that I can be depressed or in a bad mood and not have it reflect on you?
Sorry, darling. I'm sorry.
Don't apologize.
Sorry.
I've never seen such selfishness. Everything has to revolve around you.
You are angry.
I'm quiet, it has to be because I'm angry, doesn't it? It can't have anything to do with anybody else because there is nobody in the world but you. Isn't that right?
But what does it? I mean, I'm interested in knowing. Is there something, have you had some kind of argument with someone?
No.
You haven't spoken to me all day.
All right, let's forget it, all right? Let's just skip this whole thing. Maybe we better not see each other anymore. It's not your fault, it's mine. I'm just too sick. I thought I could overcome my problems. For a while, it was possible, but they just all come flooding back. I'm too neurotic.
Darling,
I can't function as a human being yet, that's all.
Darling, I understand if you have problems, but if you could just talk to me about them.
No, I'm just too sick. I'm too sick to relate, and it's that simple. Why don't you go out and find yourself somebody healthy?
Oh, please.
More of Monitor 65. I'm your host, Gene Rayburn. You know that old parlor game, pick three living persons you'd want to invite to supper together? Well, let's play a variation on it. Pick three people you'd like to hear from this half hour. How about James A. Farley for one, Selma Diamond for two, and John Daly for three? Well, that's who we got. And Matt Monroe? He's got love.
I've got love. I've got a heart that learns to sing. Who needs another single thing? I've got love. I've got dreams. And now I've bowed out of the blue. Sometimes they really do come true. For it seems when someone very special happens to a guy, he's riding high, cause baby, here am I. I've got you, and when you're here before my eyes, I wanna shout it to the skies above. I've got you, and with you I've got love. And now I've found out of the blue, sometimes they really do come true. For it seems when someone very special happens to a guy, he is riding high, and baby, here am I. I've got you, and when you're here before my eyes, I want to shout it to the skies up above. I've got you, and with you I've got love. I've got you, and with you I've got you, and with you I've got love.
Our next monitor guest is James A. Farley, former Postmaster General of the United States and a man who has been called Jim by six United States presidents. We're not here today, however, to talk politics with Mr. Farley, though I doubt if anyone can sit down with him for a very long time and not touch on the subject. What we are here to talk about is a new job that Mr. Farley, at age 76, has taken on, and I hope you don't mind our revealing your age, sir.
I don't. Everybody knows it.
That of National Chairman of the Herbert Hoover Memorial Fund of the Boys Club of America. Mr. Farley, it's with a great deal of pleasure that we welcome you to Monitor and to ask you to fill us in on the Herbert Hoover Fund. Tell us a little about its aims.
Well, I've been a member of one of the directors, so to speak, of the Boys Club of America for about 15 years, and I became a member of the board at the request of Mr. Hoover. Now, Mr. Hoover was always desirous of increasing the number of boys' clubs around the country. I think he wanted to increase to about 1,000.
Now, the Boys Clubs of America, they do a great deal, I would imagine, in combating juvenile delinquency by the very fact that they get the boys in the clubs and get them involved in healthy activities. Is there evidence to support that?
Yes, I think it's a matter of record, and I think it could be substantiated, that in communities where they have active boys' clubs, or in sections of cities where they have active boys' clubs, there's less juvenile delinquency than is to be found in other areas where clubs are not located. They've done a remarkable job in many cities in the United States. They have a number of boys' clubs in Manhattan and the Bronx and Queens. They have a very fine one in Queens. One of the finest in the country, I think, is in Greenwich, Connecticut. Chicago has done an excellent job in relation to boys' clubs, and they are scattered in all parts of the United States. Now, there is not as many as there should be and could be if more interested people, or more people interested in juvenile delinquency and the care of boys, would get back of this drive and help us in our efforts to provide funds to enable the Boys Club's organization to carry on.
How, in your opinion, does a boy of today differ from, let's say, a boy from the era of around 1900?
Well, that's a difficult question for me to answer. I was born and raised in a small community of 200 or 300 people, or maybe a little more than that, and we were brought up on barefooted in the summertime, of course. We used to go swimming in the Hudson River and fishing and all those things. The families were very close together in those days. I do think, and I don't want to be critical of families or parents, but I do think that the children were closer to their parents then than maybe they are now. I try to keep close to my children and my grandchildren. I think it's highly important. And I think many of the good families, unfortunately, have had difficulties with their children, probably through no fault of theirs. I think basically it gets down to the discipline in the home and your regard and affection for your parents and your elders, so to speak. But I always remember a remark my mother, Lord have mercy on her, made many times. She used to say, when I was a boy, if I was seen with some of the boys that she thought was bad, she'd say, "Jimmy, tell me your company and I'll tell you what you are." And always, in other words, always try to be in the company of good boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that means a lot, because one bad apple in a barrel can spoil the apples, and one boy who's mischievous can cause a lot of trouble and tell the other boys they're chicken out if they don't do the thing that he might want them to do that isn't good.
Mr. Farley, what can our Monitor listeners do to help this ideal of establishing more boys' clubs?
Well, they
America.
Can listen to the program as it's presented, and the country will be circulated well. All lodges and fraternities and all business organizations and all kinds of clubs of every kind, executives of every kind in all the big and little businesses in this country. In other words, an organized effort on the part of everyone who wants to see the thing move along is necessary, and I think we'll have it.
Well, sir, we thank you very much for being our Monitor guest. It was a real pleasure meeting you and talking with you.
Well, thanks very much. It's nice to be here. You've been in this building and in this effort for a long, long while. You started as a very young fellow, and I'm delighted to see things are moving along so well for you.
Thank you, Mr. Farley. We've been talking to a man whose 76 years belie his look, hale and hearty, James A. Farley.
Thank you.
you there. Coming up soon, Selma Diamond on the Monitor Beacon. Everybody's got cousins. Even our Monitor writer-comedian Selma Diamond, though she's not admitting it today.
I was working late the other evening, and I knew that the bakery where I usually shop would be closed. But I remembered seeing one on another street that would be open at this hour. So I looked for it, and sure enough, I found it, and I walked in. And as I'm being waited on, the owner of the bakery walks in and says to me, you're my wife's cousin. So I said, really? Who's your wife? So he tells me her name, and it's totally unfamiliar to me. So I said to him, I'm afraid you're mistaken. I have no cousin by that name. So he says to me, no, I'm not. As a matter of fact, my wife told me you both lived on the same street in Philadelphia. So I said to him, but I've never lived in Philadelphia. Then he looks at me and he says, I knew it. I told my wife you'd never admit she was your cousin. And then he says to me, but what have you got against Philadelphia? So I said, what are you talking about? I've got nothing against Philadelphia. And if your wife were my cousin, I'd say so. So he says to me, look, fancy lady, it makes no difference to me. He says, you don't have to make any excuses to me to tell me if you're a cousin or you're not a cousin, because to me, you're not such a hot shot. And I'll tell you something else. You can tell Johnny Carson he's not worth the sleep I lose over him. So I said, so don't watch him. Go to sleep. So he says, that's no good, because my wife watches him, and when she gets into bed, 1 o'clock in the morning, she wakes me up and tells me what went on. Now, a couple of days later, I was telling my aunt about this. So she says to me, I want to ask you something. When he said he's a cousin, did he ask to borrow money? So I said, no. So she says to me, so would it have hurt you if you said you were his wife's cousin?
That's our Selma, and here's our Trini Lopez and his Lemon Tree.
When I was just a lad of 10, my father said to me, come here and take a lesson from a lovely lemon tree. Don't put your faith in love, my boy, my father said to me. I fear you'll find that love is like the lovely lemon tree. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Beneath the lemon tree one day, my love and I did lie. A girl so sweet that when she smiled, the stars rose in the sky. We passed the summer lost in love beneath the lemon tree. The music of her laughter hit my father's words from me. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. One day she left without a word. She took away the sun. And in the dark she left behind. I knew what she had done. She left me for another. It's a common tale but true. A sadder tale but wiser now. I sing this song to you. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat.
You've heard about theatrical families. Well, now let's hear about a football family. One that includes a 145-pound quarterback who played in the days when it was brawn, not brains, that really counted. Keith Morris interviews our celebrity sports guest and a member of that football family, John Daly. John Daly, I have the privilege of seeing you across the country at a lot of the sporting events, and I imagine that most of the major sports you follow thoroughly. Who is, would you say, is probably one of your closest friends in the sports world?
Why, Keith, I guess the closest friend I have in the sports world is that outstanding athlete of national reputation, Toot Shaw. But now, if you're talking about playing athletes, not spectator athletes, I would think Charlie Connolly probably is the first name that comes to mind. I think he's a most admirable man as an individual, and I think wrote great and wonderful chapters in American sports history. Charlie particularly intrigues me because it's not generally known, but my own family has a very substantial football sports history. The Charlie Daly, who played for Harvard until 1903 and then went to West Point, I think he was All-American. He was about 145 pounds dripping wet and a quarterback and one of the great broken field runners of all time, is my first cousin. He was my second cousin, my father's first cousin. And actually, in those days, my Uncle Leo was captain of the Harvard baseball team. Charlie was on the football team. Leo played football. Bill Daly played football. Joe Daly played football. I think we had five Dalys on the football
team. How about John Daly?
Well, I'm one of those people who, I'm 6 feet now and weigh a decent amount. When I was in preparatory school, arrested development, I guess you call it, I was about 5'4" when I graduated. I played football, baseball, track, was on the cross-country team, but never distinguished myself in any way at all.
John, turning to the little men, I know one of your very good friends is Eddie Arcaro. Do you like the sport of horse racing? Because I think you've made a lot of presentations at some of the tracks, and I see you there on occasions.
Well, actually, I belong to a club with Toots and Eddie Arcaro called the Skeeters, and we believe in the improvement of the breed. It is a combination. We all like horse racing. We like, I think, even more the fellowship that we have in our group. Joe Martino from National Lead is there, and Joe has a boat. So once a year, we all climb on his boat, and we go down to Monmouth, and we just have a wonderful
day. Without the horses.
Without the horses. We have a wonderful day together. We go, to Garden State a good deal. Some of the folks at Garden State, Sonny Werblin and the management are in the club, and we just have a nice time, actually. It's a kind of full day's outing for us.
May I ask about your wife, who I've had the pleasure of meeting? She looks like she's very active in the sports world to a degree, or at least a great spectator now.
Well, Virginia is a great spectator, and Virginia was very active. Loved tennis, for instance, particularly, and then, of course, had an unhappy accident about 5 years ago and almost literally smashed her right ankle so that she can't play tennis anymore. In fact, she can't even dance. I thought that may be just an excuse. I'm a wretched dancer, and I think she's using the ankle. That's what I think.
John, do you do anything actively today, playing golf or tennis, swimming?
Well, I play golf when I can, which unfortunately is not often enough, and that explains one of the highest handicaps in the Burning Tree in Washington.
Have you ever played with Jackie Gleason?
I have been on the course with Jackie, but fortunately wasn't playing with him. I'd rather watch Jackie play golf than play against him. I play with Toots. This is like shooting ducks in a barrel.
How many strokes do you give him?
I don't give him any. I never give anybody any strokes if I could possibly help it.
John Daly, thank you very much for joining us. This is Keith Morris of Sports Illustrated.
And you'd be surprised how many sportsmen get their athletic activities in places like Toots Shaw. Here's the theme music from the new motion picture Lord Jim, courtesy of Charles Albertine and Orchestra. You're listening to Monitor, friends, and coming up very shortly, NBC Monitor News on the Hour. My name is Gene Rayburn, and I invite you to stay tuned for that new segment.
This is Chet Huntley. I'll be with you each weekday morning with Emphasis Plain Talk on NBC Radio.